prayers of an entire five-state, or six if you include Connecticut, but I never do, five-state region hangs on one man's shoulders, or two the shoulders of two men, the Jays and, the Boston Celtics. So if there is to be another parade, I fear that it is only up to this basketball team, but based on what you saw last night, it seems inevitable. I don't want to jinx anything, but it seems inevitable.
Well, set it in the right direction.
It is.
Don't let the patch get hot.
Two things, correction. Apparently, it was not anything to do with the Celtics, the drone that fell and injured three. Want to correct the record there.
Yes.
And also, how about Skims placement on the parquet and the commercials going
Donovan
through?
Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah.
You like that, huh?
Saying everybody's wearing Skims.
All right. You like the D. Mitch commercial.
Yeah. I don't keep up, but.
Well. Later on, we'll get to a little bit of news about somebody who is contemplating a major life change. We talk about this guy on this show all the time, and maybe he will wear Skims should the ceremonial moment arrive. So that is coming up at 8:45 on this morning's show. But we got to get back to the rest of the news.
Yes, we do. And American Airlines has a new tech that has Greg pretty jazzed. It's piloting technology that will audibly alert gate agents when customers try to board planes prematurely.
Oh.
Meaning they go on the group ahead of their group.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you. Back of the line.
That is it.
You're in group F. Get back where group F is,
right.
You jackass.
How do you feel? How do you feel if you're with somebody, you're traveling with somebody, and you're in different groups, though?
Yep.
Have to get in the later group if you want to go together.
You wait 5 seconds to get on the plane.
Right.
Like, you don't have to get on the plane together. I know you're in love. Great. Like, this is people who are trying to buck the system and get the overhead bin over their seat and jam their suitcase, which is too big. Should be, the suitcase should have gone in. You should have checked it.
Wow. Right.
But it's too big to get in there. So you want to hog the whole entire overhead bin. You don't want to pay $50 or whatever it is to have your suitcase fly down in the cargo hold.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic.
I love this.
Thank God.
If you ever want to take an alien to show them exactly where we are as a society, just put them in a JetBlue boarding zone. Like, you know, like the guy or woman that's behind the desk says, please wait.
Right.
Clear that. Like, they make it abundantly clear.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then nobody listens. Everybody stands right in front, causing everything to last longer.
Because you don't know if, like, are you waiting in line?
Right.
Are you in this line because this is your boarding pass line? Or are you just waiting for them to call your whatever your number is?
Right.
And that's
then they play
so
dumb.
Annoying.
And then you sit there. And the strangest thing, Greg, is everybody rushes on the plane, and then they can't wait to get off of it.
Yeah.
When we flew to Nashville, I was Group Z, and it was great. I got on the plane. We took off in 5 minutes.
American has fixed this. The next thing I want is that if you get up and try to leave before the natural order on an aeroplane, there is a taser or some kind of electric shock that sends you back into your seat. You can wait in line like everybody else.
I got the best fix for it, Greg.
They should do the same thing as when they're boarding. Like, if you're rows 1 through 5, get up. Get off the plane. If you're rows like that, they should do that when people are getting off the plane.
They can't control it, though, the way they can control the ticket thing with tech. Like,
Here's how you can control it, Greg. Got the perfect idea. There should be, like, as soon as the plane lands, they have the capability for, like, a mechanical thing to come up in the aisle between rows, and so
like a railing,
so it won't allow whoever's in the back to make their way up.
I mean,
until their railing goes up.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like an awful lot of money to spend to keep people who cannot act like normal, courteous human beings in line.
But you got
to
do it
anyway. Good move by them.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's in two airports right now before going to others: Albuquerque and Tucson.
Okay, excellent.
Next story, very creepy.
The Greg Hill Morning Show presents.
You think I am a creepy guy?
How creepy is it?
It was probably the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
Can I put the camera in the lady toilet?
And it's kind of creepy, which is nice.
Back up, you creep.
A guy from India was arrested at Logan Airport on Monday after allegedly making unwanted advances towards another passenger, touching her without consent, and then openly masturbating on a flight coming into Boston. 39-year-old Krishna Kupal Kunapuli was flying from Abu Dhabi to Boston on Monday when he asked a woman if he could sit next to her while waiting for the restroom to become available. She had seats next to her that were open. Mm-hmm. He was waiting for a vacant restroom, asked if he could sit down. She said yes. They started small talking, and he then started complimenting her on her looks, asking if she would spend the night with him, allegedly offered her $5,000 as a gift while he bragged about how much money that he had. He then started touching her hair, and that's when she felt a bit uncomfortable. Yeah. She got up to go to the galley to find a flight attendant. Mm. He followed her. The flight attendant first thought that they were a couple, but then realized they weren't when they realized the man was touching the woman's breast and she was trying to back away.
What in the world?
The flight attendant sent them back to their assigned seats, which were separate. That is when another passenger saw him masturbating while watching a video on his phone.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, really, like they should open the door up and drop the dude
right.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, when are we going to my idea?
Jails on a plane?
No, bouncers.
Ooh,
legit
I like
bouncers. Yeah. I'm talking black t-shirt, flashlight.
Yoked
like
up.
The rock.
Yoked up.
Like the rock, yeah. You want
big
the yeah.
bouncers where, you know, tattooed yeah. up like, damn.
Yeah.
And then if she has an issue, she could go right to the bouncer and say, hey, listen, this guy's bothering
right.
me.
Throw the guy right out the club.
And the guy could take him yep. right to the back of the plane and tune him up a little bit.
That's a good yeah. idea. AB has appeared to have apologized to Tom Brady.
This story is so weird.
Yeah.
So apparently Antonio Brown wanted to apologize to Tom Brady.
All right.
They somehow got on the phone.
Yep.
And I don't believe this is AI.
I don't believe it is AI either.
Okay, sure?
Because, yes.
All right.
But Antonio Brown was, like, recording the whole thing and then released it.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Yes, he posted it on social media, but then others have posted it that, you know, are legit news sources.
Okay,
so
we have a bit of the audio.
Okay.
Just talk to them people about some of their traumas and how, you know, the older we get, we still stuck with our traumas for our kids and, like, seeking therapy and how to deal with traumas because... You know, we just human beings and a product of what we go through and how people treated us. So kind of just focus on raising the kids and try to do some positive stuff. That's it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know, man. We're all dealing with something. Life is like, no matter who you are, we all have our stuff we're dealing with. You know,
it's never perfect, right?
It's not all roses for everybody. I just wanted you to succeed, man. I hope you always know that. I always wanted to see you succeed.
Huh. I mean, what a guy Tom Brady is.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Like, the man was posting about his wife and all kinds of, like, out-of-line crap.
Yep.
And then Tom Brady is offering forgiveness.
Yes.
Well, maybe he was telling him about his wife. Tom, I'm trying to give you some.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get. You know, like when you try to tell somebody they don't want to listen. And so you start to, like, you know, give them some more and more hints. So it's like, hey, you
pretty,
better be.
Pretty classy guy.
Very.
And so he posted that to social media.
He did, yeah.
Greg, I would just hope that Tom does not accept any other calls from that guy because God, you can't trust that he's not going to be recording everything you say.
I mean, that's unless Tom said go ahead and release it.
Yeah. No, because there's stuff in there he talked about his family, like that he I don't think would want the world to hear.
And that's illegal in some places.
Yeah. It's kind of a wild move to like offer an apology to somebody. And then record it so you can share it on social media.
Yeah, this
like
is what, weird.
You have to question what the point of was the point of the apology actually to apologize?
No, it was the definition of self-serving.
Yes, right? Like, okay. All right, Courtney. Great job. Is
Thank
that
you.
It? Yeah.
We have a dumbest, but...
We do have a dumbest
we
of
do.
The day. All right, let's get to that real quick.
Okay. Stop being dumb.
And now, this woman is stone cold dumb.
I'm a dumbass.
The dumbest of the day.
Try again, dumbass.
All right, Curtis, we listened to everything that happened yesterday. This may have been the dumbest of the day, I guess.
Quiggy, can I hear your best Australian accent?
Crikey, mate.
So,
put another shrimp on a barbie.
Thank you. That's why I wanted to do this. So, a woman in New South Wales, Australia, was walking, and she... dropped her phone between boulders.
A crevasse, if you will?
A gigantic crevasse.
Okay.
And, you know, instead of saying, well, hopefully I got Apple Care, she did what any you know, respectful person in 2024 would do. She went down between them, rappelled, is that the word?
Yeah, rappelled is going down.
Rappelled into the crevasse.
For 7 hours.
She got stuck in there?
Oof.
For 7 hours.
So they had to go rescue her because she was trying to rescue her phone. Right. Well, you can't live without your phone.
That is true.
Especially if you haven't backed up your contacts.
Right, and it's expensive to get a new phone.
Yes.
It sure is. It's also expensive for 6 paramedics to come and find you. Right. But nonetheless, this woman, I don't even know, did she find it in the end? Did she get it?
I believe she did not find her phone, but she was rescued.
She was rescued.
After 7 hours in the crevasse.
That is just...
Every Australian I meet is very sexual.
Well, maybe there were some photos in there she didn't want the world to see.
When did I say that? I was like, is that me?
Can I play
another...
I think
that was Liam Hendricks.
Can I play another Australian-related drop that is a little bit longer?
Of course.
Because this one might be one of my favorites.
Grubhub has announced the top trending cuisine of the year.
Uh-huh.
Australian food is number one.
Really? What's Australian food?
I don't know.
Like shrimp on the barbie?
Like Vegemite?
Yeah, I guess. Like Outback? You're ordering a ton of Outback steakhouse?
Oh, like a Vegemite sandwich.
Wait. Time out.
What?
Outback is Australian food?
Have you ever been?
It's where the Bloomin' Onion's from, is Sydney,
exactly.
Australia.
Exactly.
All right.
It
that
is.
Has nothing to do with Australia.
Yep.
That's where the Bloomin' Courtney.
Outback cheesy fries are some of the best
and those come
Australian
straight from
delicacy.
They come from Australia.
Yeah.
Cheesy fry world.
I'm often asked about this, but this very thing right here is the reason that 5 or 6 years ago, on a trip to Lowell, I identified Courtney as the next news person on this radio show.
Yeah.
I knew it, Curtis.
Awesome.
You're in Lowell,
She's
and I said, you know what?
Like Outback?
She is the person for the job.
Yeah.
It was Outback.
So, yep.
All right. Let's get to Courtney and to what is trending right now. Coming up, the director of The Comeback, which has dropped on Netflix, 3-episode documentary on the 2004 Boston Red Sox. And the director of that, Colin Barnicle, will join us in a little bit here. Curtis, you loved it, right?
I highly, highly recommend it.
Okay. Celtics start the season with a win last night. Bruins do not get a win. And you can talk about that all day long here on Boston Sports Original WEI.
And we should probably talk about that right now, too, because eek, Scheim. Wasn't that your lock last night?
Oh, well, yeah. I had given out at the end of the show. I had said Celtics,
well,
Bruins,
timing
Boston
of it isn't
parlay.
Relevant.
No. I had said it, and Courtney looked at me and goes, "Is that your lock?" And I said, "Sure, yeah, make it the lock." And unfortunately, the Bruins did not come to play. Celtics did. Should have just bet on the Celtics.
Courtney, I would like to say, no disrespect, but I'd like to say one thing to you about coming at Scheim when it comes to wagering, if I could, please.
And now he has to overcome another obstacle. So I'm going to support him. I'm going to lift him up. And I'm going to be there for him because I see the way he fights. I see the way that he works. And I know who he is as a person. And that's all I have to say to address him.
Okay. Courtney, you can't leave Scheim alone.
All right. Well,
I appreciate you, Greg.
I just, you're keeping everybody accountable. I'm kept pretty accountable on this show. So Scheim should as well.
Keep your receipts, Courtney.
I always do. Big receipt girl.
All right. Well, it is a Celtics Wednesday, and Mego, who is following this team all season intently, will join us at 9 today and every Wednesday on this show. And tomorrow, Mike Milbury on a Bruins Thursday at 9 as well. So,
you know what the best part? I know Wiggy lives down there now, but like the Garden has always been, you know, electric on big game nights or whatever.
Yeah.
But ever since they redid that whole area, the build-up, the crowd, the like, it's just something about the way, because just seeing it aesthetically.
Yeah.
It's like, it's totally made it look so much bigger and better.
It was wild last night because I was worried about, DMs and I were worried about getting over there, because by the time we left the Seaport, it was 5:45 or whatever, and I was like, it's going to take an hour.
Right, where are we going to get second dinner?
Yeah, right. I was worried about that, where I was going to eat, always a big concern to me. But everybody was there early. That place, when I got there at 6 or whatever,
it's
that
packed.
Place was jammed. And they did such a great job with the ceremony. The way they did it, and we talked about it at the start of the show, but the rings are just incredible.
Wiggy dropped off air that he saw it in person.
Oh, yeah.
Close.
Where'd you see a ring last night?
Just, you know, kicking it in the North End.
Oh.
You know, happened to bump into the unicorn who was having dinner and was a beautiful, beautiful, great guy, beautiful ring. So,
yeah. You know, what did you say to Kristaps?
I just said, hello, congratulations.
Did you identify yourself as Jermaine Wiggins, Super Bowl champion?
No, I didn't really have to do that. Like, you know, a lot of times I get introduced as that.
Maybe offer to trade rings?
No, it's massive. And he has giant hands, so I know I could. I'd need two fingers.
Did he take it apart for you so you could see the inside?
No, I was like, you know, I kept it real, like, copacetic and just, you know, I don't want to be bothering nobody. Enjoy the ring.
I want to see the inside. Like, I want to see the piece of the parquet.
The box is cool because it's, like, it almost is like this, you know, and I know, like, if you live in a place where you feel extremely confident, like, you can bring it out and display it in the box that it's in. It's got lights in and everything. I told you it's got like this little screen that plays a video of them making it. So it's an amazing thing. It is massive though. Like when you put it on, it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's like.
It was funny last night, Al Horford saying that he gave him the wrong size and that the thing was too big. Did you happen to?
No.
He was mic'd up during that ceremony last night. And so he apparently the ring size thing is like, do you know, you don't know, you
I don't remember my ring size.
It was like
of course you do,
maybe like so 9 or 10. I'm just talking about the actual, like, when you put it on, it's going to be hard to wear it to places because it's so big.
Cool. But it's cool when you open that thing up. And it has an actual piece of the parquet in it.
So cool.
It's awesome. You do look, everybody in Twitch is saying that you look like a little kid next to Porzingis.
I got home and I told
my... I need to see that again. Mitch, can you throw that back up? Was it on Twitch or was it just
on
your Instagram?
It was on Twitch.
It was on Twitch.
I got home and I told my wife that I felt emasculated. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Standing next to, you know, Porzingis.
Because you're not a short guy.
No, but when you stand next to those guys, it's almost like at one point I wanted to say, any chance you can just step off the curb a little bit? Because it's very emasculating.
Yeah.
So I can see how short dudes, Courtney, you're always criticizing them.
No, I'm not.
I could see how they, you know, when you have to look up to somebody and you're a grown man, you feel like,
Were a lot of celebrities out after the game?
There was a few people out. You know, there was a few people out. Some of Courtney's beloved
BC
Eagles were out.
They love it at Strega. Yeah. I'm bummed because I had looked up, because the last basic brunch we had at Strega, we were lucky enough to run into Jaylen Brown when we were leaving and he was coming in. But the Celtics are on the road. I think they have like Charlotte on the second and Atlanta on the fourth, and our brunch is on the third.
So. But it was cool to run into Kai Cian, you know, the Twitch YouTuber that is just, you know, massive everywhere.
Good dude.
Yeah, really good dude. You see him in McDonald's commercials. Yes, you see him in T-Mobile commercials with Patrick Mahomes.
Very dope hat he has.
Yeah, like he's got this, you know, he's all dressed up like, you know, kind of in like this mob attire, like looking like a gangster. So he's
Johnny Bart was with him in the garden.
Yeah, earlier in the day they were doing something where they were.
Johnny Bart gets in everywhere.
Well, it's Johnny Bart. It's Johnny Bart. He has that right.
Next.
But he's real, like, he was cool. He was taking pictures with people, you know, he wasn't one of those that didn't want to take pictures. I actually FaceTimed my two boys who were in college because they're bigger fans than I am. Mm-hmm. So he was talking to them for a hot minute. But it was really cool, though, like, to be out there. But, yeah, that ring in person is
looks pretty good.
And it's so...
And I think they're going to get another one.
Yeah.
I don't want to jinx anybody. All right, well, joining us now to talk a little bit about the comeback on Netflix is the director, Colin Barnicle. Hey, Colin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I have delayed watching. Curtis got a screener and watched. I wanted to wait until today and sit down and watch all three. But what was it about this project that attracted you and made you say? Because it has been the 2004, the incredible season has been explored before. What was it about this that made you say we got to have another look at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the most covered thing maybe in sports over the last 20 years. But
You know, I used to, when I was, I worked in the clubhouse in 2007. And every time I would get off work, everybody would be like, what are the guys like in the clubhouse, you know? So I really wanted to kind of explore that because, you know, the players are, you know, from being from Boston, you learn to dislike the Yankees at an early age. But these guys are on, you know, one-year, two-year contracts. They don't hate the Yankees. So I was like, when did that start? When did the personal animosity start where the players start to be like, I just don't want to win. I want to beat the Yankees. So kind of tracking that back, like what was the beginning of it, you know? And, you know, it's three episodes. The first 2.5 episodes, we don't even get to, you know, the comeback from 3-down. It's more like the comeback from, you know, 85, 86 years, the comeback from, you know, 2003, and kind of like exploring about like, you know, how a team changed its culture from, you know, it's really not a rivalry with the Yankees if you lose 85 straight years. So exploring how they were able to do that, how they were able to change the culture and the ownership in baseball operations. And then, you know, most importantly, you know, the clubhouse. You want to see what's going on in there.
Is it accurate that Robert Kraft asked you to delve into how the Red Sox would not have been down 3-0 if it weren't for Bill Belichick? No? Okay. Sorry.
We didn't get that. No.
Okay, all right.
Colin, I think all three episodes are good. The final one was spectacular. There's things there that I think were about the same age. I lived this like you did. I didn't know before watching it. The part that I think the comeback does a great job on, too, is the Cold War winter of 03-04, where it's pre-social media and it's actual Sports Center interviews that are breaking news. Could you talk about what you guys found out there and just how close the Red Sox were to landing Alex Rodriguez?
So, yeah, in that winter, Alex was, I mean, he had signed a contract. Jed Hoyer has in his files a signed contract with Boston Red Sox letterhead with A-Rod on it. And we were going to get him. It got convoluted. The Players Association basically said, you can't restructure a contract. And it was about $12.5 million. That was it. That divided the Alex Rodriguez from being a Red Sox. And right in the middle of that, you know, you got to trade Nomar Garciaparra, the icon of Boston, if you're getting a new shortstop. And right in the middle of that, Kevin Millar went on with Dan Patrick on ESPN. And he basically said, you know, we'll take A-Rod over Nomar, and we'll take A-Rod over Manny. And he got in his truck afterwards. Nomar called him, rightfully so, saying, like, what was that about? And Millar, for about 15, 20 years, really thought he was like, no, I just answered a question about who was going to be throwing me the ball if I was playing first base. And we replayed the clip for him, and we said, no, they're kind of asking you who you want. And he was like, oh, okay, Nomar has a right to be mad. And so, I mean, the whole 04 team, it was like the whole culture that was created in 2003, it's kind of like almost like a Seinfeld episode. It's like, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, you know? That culture kind of got screwy in the beginning of 2004. And they had a comeback from that, too. Keep saying the comeback.
No spoilers here, but Curtis shared this with me, so I'll try to say it in the best way possible. You did uncover, I think for the first time, some, you know, allegations of cheating on the part of the Yankees.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry about spoilers. I've been talking to just about everybody on the street about
What did you guys uncover?
So part of it was before game two of the 2004 ALCS when Pedro was pitching. Doug Mirabelli, they're all kind of in the pitcher's room where they had their pre-meetings, and Doug Mirabelli, for whatever reason, he reached up into a ceiling panel and he found a microphone, what they thought was a microphone or looked like a microphone, and all the players thought it was a microphone. And they got very paranoid that this thing was transmitting to somewhere in Yankee Stadium, so they ended up having to do all their pitchers' meetings They would walk out of the clubhouse, walk across the street, and they would do it in the team bus for the rest of every time they were in New York. So, yeah, I don't know. Is it real? Is it? I mean, they definitely found the microphone. I don't know why it was there. Maybe it was, you know, a prank or whatever, but the players definitely thought there was something to it. Although they did give up 19 runs at home, so it's like, I don't know, you weren't bugging your own clubhouse.
Colin, like we've seen a lot of this stuff, and, you know, it's been so long. Is there something in this that we're going to see that we don't know about, is completely new, or was there something new that you found out from doing this that you had no idea with all the, you know, kind of stories that have been out for a long time?
You know, I think we put a lot of the rumors to bed. There's the, you know, did they take shots of Jack Daniels during it? The answer is yes, and you get to see it in this, you know. Another part, you know, I was at Game 7, 2003, when Wakefield gave up the home run, and I was really interested in hearing from Grady Little. And we got Grady in this. And I remember at one point during the interview, he said, you know, it's just different if you're there. And, you know, when you're in Yankee Stadium, you have to make the decision. And, you know, and he turns to me and goes, where were you? And I go, I was at Yankee Stadium. I was about four rows behind you. And he was like, oh, okay. So just hearing from him, the 360 view of kind of that, and the whole self-doubt of these people, like, who built this. You look 20 years back, and it seems like a fairy tale, but, like, it's like baseball. Like 7 out of 10 times, they made the wrong decision, either, you know, in ownership or the front office or down in the clubhouse. Like, wasn't really preordained that this was going to happen.
I thought it was amazing that Grady Little hadn't aged. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But
oh, my God, I thought the same thing. I thought he was about 7 years old when in 2003, and then I went to visit him. I said, Grady, you look, I guess, great, right, or the same.
He's like frozen in time. But the element for me is just how loose they were. Like, we had all, you know, yeah, obviously all the cowboy up, the idiots, all that stuff has become cliche, but the footage of the locker room, they're down 3-0 at Fenway Park. Following Game 3 in my lifetime, I have never seen a team get more rightfully destroyed than that team did. It was like unleashing the fury of 86 years on players, calling them frauds. And in that morning, or that midday, they're at Fenway Park watching Animal House.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. You know, I mean, it's just a group of just guys who, and, you know, Kevin Millar has a lot to do with that. Like, he made that place like a walled garden where you could, like, let your freak flag fly. It didn't matter who you were. You were all important. Everybody was going out together. I think Derek Lowe at one point says in the interview, you know, we would all go to, you know, the restaurant together, all 25 of us. And after the interview, I was like, restaurant, huh? Not a bar? And he was like, well, you know. Yeah. So,
well,
you meant, know, it's just that.
I'm sure he meant Daisy Buchanan's. He probably meant yeah. Daisy's, I would assume. Yeah.
Colin, you keep talking about the culture back then, and you look at the guys that were the stars on that team, and I think that's the difference between now and then. They all seemed to have this connection to Boston that we just don't get anymore. It feels like, you know, even after they were long gone, they are still Boston athletes. They'll always be Boston athletes. Did that come across when you were talking to them, that they have a special connection to Boston that they don't necessarily have with other places or other teams they've played on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's two things. I think it's one that, you know, Kevin Millar, he's gone. He's going to Japan. His Major League Baseball career is over. So Boston to him is like kind of the savior of his whole career. And the same thing with David Ortiz. He's released. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be playing Major League Baseball, or he might be a backup somewhere. So it's kind of like their last chance or their first chance for Theo, someone like that, where it's just like, you know, and speaking to Derek Lowe, Derek Lowe played like 12 more major league seasons, and he was like, oh, man, I really screwed up. I should have stayed in Boston. I was like, you won like 150 games afterwards. And he's like, no, I should have stayed. But all those guys are just like, you know, it's the idea of feeling like you're a part of the town. And I do feel like Wake, Tim Wakefield, he had a big, big part of that. He, you know, having lived here, having been the longest tenured guy, you know, that he kind of brought them into, like, this is, you're part of the culture here. It's not just the city you're playing in. You're part of the city.
Yeah, I think David was on with us, David Ortiz, last at Winter Weekend, and he made the point that losing in 03 made him understand Boston. It was like a crash course, having never really understood this market, never been here. And then you see that. I mean, the game
that was at the Jimmy Fund.
Oh, the Jimmy Fund.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
At the game five of the ALCS remains the best game I've ever seen in person. It was the most stressful, unbelievable, exhausting existence of my life. And is Ortiz the first player in baseball history to have two walk-offs in one calendar day? That has to be, right?
Oh, he has to be. I mean, they got, like, no sleep during that. He was like a zombie, you know, during that whole thing. He looked, you know, he knew the whole thing kind of rested on him. And by the way, the players were not shy about it during the, they were like, oh, no, we were all looking at him to get the big hit. We knew we weren't. Like, you know, I think Kevin Millar was like, I'm not going to get a hit off Mariano Rivera. You know, I think I took him deep once, but I'm not going to do it. It's going to be David. So he's, you know, it's kind of when David became Big Poppy. You know, he's always been the same guy. He's always been this, like, larger-than-life guy. But that's, like, when he becomes, quote-unquote, Big Poppy.
Well, there are three episodes. It is called The Comeback. It is on Netflix now as we speak. And Colin Barnicle directed it. And thank you for taking the time to talk about it this morning with us.
No, thank you.
Okay. Curtis, you loved it, right? A+?
I mean, I could watch it. I could just watch the games again, so I may not be the best person. But it was also, and I didn't want to really get him on this because I'm sure the organization was good to him. I didn't want to put him in a bad spot. But watch it and tell me if you recognize the owners you see. Because the ones that are part of this are people that I want to run my baseball team. I don't recognize them today. Like, who they were, as invested as they were, as hands-on as they were, Tom Warner, Larry Lucchino, Theo Epstein, John Henry, were all there, and they were. It was their mission to win. And sadly, you don't see that anymore.
Well, I got plenty of time because I don't get a new episode of The Penguin until Sunday night.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you enjoying it?
Oh, man, I love it. It's just so many. There's just so much, so many different things that need to be answered that you know you're not going to get in one season.
No, I think. But my only critique,
okay,
Chime, you may join me in this. The actor who is playing Oz,
Colin Farrell,
is veering in his portrayal, is veering a little too close to Tony Soprano,
mm-hmm,
if I may say that.
Yeah. I think a lot of, I think it's,
it's a dangerous territory to be in.
But I think they openly, not openly, but I think they're openly like, we have taken some of the Soprano stuff and incorporated it into this.
That's okay. If it's an homage, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But he's starting to veer towards sounding exactly like playing the character of Oz,
mm-hmm,
exactly like Tony Soprano, which is a no-go for me. You'd never touch Tony Soprano.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I get what you're saying. I just think it's more so that he's gone down the road of, like, it's a gangster mafia, you know, Italian mafia type of,
I mean, people in the Twitch chat are
story.
Saying, they're saying I'm an idiot because that's the point of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't understand comic books. Is that correct, Sean? I mean, am I missing the point that it's supposed to be an homage to Tony Soprano?
I don't think that Oswald Cobblepot is an homage to Tony Soprano. Anybody that's read the comics doesn't see Oswald Cobblepot the Penguin as Tony Soprano.
Thank you. All right, we will be right back. All this talk about the comeback has me thinking, Curtis, and when that rarity occurs, I don't want to waste it, is Alex Rodriguez the most hated opponent in the history of Boston sports?
For me, yes.
Okay, so that means you can't have Bill Laimbeer in there or... Mm-hmm.
Kyrie.
Kyrie Irving.
Eli Manning.
God,
his
dumb I'm talking
face.
About hate, though. Somebody that you despise.
Like, so I despise Terrell Suggs. I despised Alex Rodriguez. I despised Kobe Bryant when he was playing the Celtics. But Alex Rodriguez perfectly encapsulates a guy that's really talented, because you have to be good to really be hated, just a loathsome figure in terms of a total and complete fraud, and a guy that you wanted to be with, but were unable to, who then went to your biggest rival. Like, everything about him was just so perfectly hateable.
Somebody in the Twitch chat is suggesting Claude Lemieux, I guess maybe for what he did to Cam Neely, but mm-hmm. that doesn't... Nah. I mean, I think it has to be... It was an ongoing...
Right.
Like, hate for A-Rod.
Yeah, I don't... I can't... It's really hard to find... You know, like, you brought up Bill Laimbeer.
LeBron?
Curtis
mentioned...
Nah, I don't think they're really...
Yeah, maybe LeBron, back when, like... Because that was great. That was legit hate. Like, those Celtics in 08...
Do you need a long period of time, though? Like, do you need, like, the rivalry or the hatred towards this period to be over, you know, 3, 4, 5 seasons? Or, like... People hate Kyrie, even though it's like a 2-3 season thing.
Oh, yeah. Great correction, by the way. It was Ulf Samuelson who took Cam Neely, caused his hip issue. Sorry.
No.
I stand corrected on that.
So,
a lot of
Bruins fans, I feel like when I was, you know, younger growing up, a lot of Bruins fans could not stand the Canadiens and Patrick Waugh and a lot of those guys. I almost feel like that, like, so, you know, but I was a lot younger, so maybe somebody that would be older, like, was there hatred there? Was it when the Guy Lafleur, he was an 80s player, right?
I think late, maybe. He maybe played into the 80s.
Okay, but, you know, like some of those guys.
Well, yeah,
like,
that was a similar drought when right. it came to the Red Sox, where the Bruins just could not.
And they hated them, Canadians. Though.
It also has to be longevity, though. Yeah. Like, how, that's a flash in the pan, you know, the what you're talking about. Like, a Bruins hatred.
But that was a wild, though.
But was it as long as a Yankees hatred? No.
Yeah. Well, you think for the real Bruins fans that were around in, I don't know, late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, it was like Bruins and Canadians.
I think it's A-Rod.
I actually came up with one better, I think. Yeah. For a period of time, Roger Clemens. In 99, when he took on Pedro at Fenway, game three of the LCS in 04, like, the fact that he left here to get closer to home in Canada, and then got roided up to the nines and pitched for the Yankees. Like, I hate it. And remember when he would throw at Trot Nixon just because Trot Nixon had good numbers against him? I hated Roger Clemens. Mm. God, did I hate that guy. But maybe A-Rod. I don't know. Those two.
I would say the Lakers in the mid-80s. I'm talking about the Kurt Rambis, the right. Magic Bird, that whole element. Then there was obviously the Sixers you threw in there.
Yeah, the Bill Laimbeer was...
Bill Laimbeer era.
Was despised around here.
So there's been... But that, like, I guess like Curtis says, it would have to be more in your lifetime. That's why I'm catching the tail end of some of the Bruins stuff.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a break. It's a Celtics Wednesday. And Mego will be here next to talk Celtics.